This is the Watchin Lake Bible School 2018. Our speaker this evening is our brother Frank Abel, and his subject is Russia on Israel's border. Brother Frank.
Well, brothers and sisters and young people, this picture you're looking at was taken when Russian forces moved into the Crimea, that is in the eastern Ukraine. There's no marking on the vehicles to illustrate where they came from. There was nothing on the soldier to illustrate who he was fighting for, but these men in these trucks all appeared. And although many people held suspicions as to where they came from, it was really an exercise of Russian military policy. That's a word you might, if you don't already know it, get to know. Maskarovanka is the way I've learned to pronounce it. And this is a little account that was found in Global News concerning it. Russian history is filled with similar battles in which the country's troops have faked attacks or staged ambushes to defeat much larger opponents. They use fake tanks to mislead the Germans in the battle during the Second World War. Maskarovanka has since morphed into a geopolitical strategy for the Russians, but the three elements involved remain the same. Distract your opponent, disguise what you're doing, and spread disinformation to sow confusion and delay a response. Global News, June 9th this year. One final paragraph. One need look no further than Russia's recent alleged actions in Crimea, Syria, the UK, and the US presidential election to see how effectively the Kremlin can influence other world powers while denying involvement all along. We haven't seen much like this, at least most of us who are living. It may be that history attests to it, but in terms of what Russia is doing, this is really quite effective and unusual. So what does this mean to Christadelphia, that Russia is on Israel's border? Because that's really what we want to emphasize. Well, first of all, Brother John Thomas foresaw this as he recorded it in Alpha's Israel in 1848-49, 170 years ago. So this has been a Christadelphian belief for a long, long time. There was a very influential regime in power in Russia at the time of John Thomas. Not the same regime that we normally talked about in maybe just a generation ago, and certainly not what we're talking about now, but at that particular time, it was quite an influential regime, and we'll see a little bit of it tonight, Lord willing. Since its demise, that is, the ruling powers in Russia at the time of John Thomas, the Soviet Union has come and gone. Some of you young ones might not know what the Soviet Union was. Well, that's what we knew as Russia just a generation ago. But now the Russian Federation has taken over. So there's been quite a development in Russia's Russian politics since that time. And as Christadelphians, we have always believed that the rise of the power of Russia was an indication that the invasion of the land of Israel was not far ahead. Many thousands of our brethren have died with that belief. Now, some of what I want to say tonight is things that influenced me when I was in my younger years, wondering if all this was right. You know what Mom and Dad taught, we know what some of the books of the truth taught, but what could we learn independently of that? And I was always influenced by this fact that if you looked in Genesis 10, you could always see a number of the names of nations which we read about tonight in Ezekiel 39 and in Ezekiel 38. And I always thought that was kind of neat. And looking at a map, you could see where they were. They were the sons of Japheth: Gomer, Magog, Tubal, Meshech, Togarma, Tarshish, all nations that are mentioned later on. So there must be some connection between those nations and what we read in Ezekiel 38. And if you look closer at the map, this is independent of Christadelphians, so you know you always want to look just to make sure that you can see what other people are saying. You'll notice up at the top left corner of the screen, it says, the descendants of Gomer occupied probably Germany, France, Spain, and the British Isles. So Gomer's one of the nations mentioned, and it spread through Western Europe. Then you can see various other of the names in various places. So Europe, and Europe to as far east as Russia, is one of the clear indications of the nations to be involved in this battle. Now, when we look about this nation of Russia, we normally look at Ezekiel 38. And if we're reading our King James Bible, we will see that it speaks against the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him. But having looked at, say, the RV and other versions, little more recent versions, we see that it says, Son of man, set thy face toward Gog, the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal, and prophesy against him. And so people who were looking at making that translation and other newer translations have seen that this word prince, this word chief rather, is the word Rosh, and it really is the name of a people. And so we see it right in the text. Well, those things all added up to be quite important to me in my younger years as independent evidence of what other people thought about this prophecy concerning Russia. So looking at something like the Amplified Bible, a commentary on Ezekiel 38, which would be very independent of Christadelphians, this is what they have to say in their comment on Ezekiel 38. Gog is a symbolic name standing for the leader of the world powers antagonistic to God. Meshech and Tubal are understood to have been the same as the Mashi and Tibareni of the Greeks, tribes that inhabited regions of the Caucasus. Rosh, which some would identify with Russia, must have designated the land and people somewhere in the same quarter. Therefore, the Gog of Ezekiel must be viewed as, in some sense, the head of the high regions of Northwest Asia. So that's from Fairbairn's Imperial Standard Bible Encyclopedia. And there's a lot of evidence like that. You may know if you've read the Bible Magazine and Brother Paul Billington's work, there's a lot of other evidence. Here's another one that was in the same commentary where he's talking about Gesenius. Observes that it can scarcely be doubtful that the first trace of the Russians is given here. Then Hengstenberg in 1802-1869 could not bear to see the poor Russians ranged among the enemies of the kingdom of God, but the one who gave Ezekiel this vision of what was to happen in the latter days, verse 16, made no mistake in such a forecast as all the world can see today. So I always felt, and I think many of you would feel too, that when you want to go out and you want to give a public lecture or you want to be talking to some of your friends and you want to be rather definitive, you really need to know all of the information that you can accumulate about people who feel that prophecy is about Russia. Now, from Elpis Israel and John Thomas in particular, he says, but what nations are signified by these three proper names? The question has been long since determined by the learned. The celebrated Bocard about the year 1640 observed in his elaborate researches into sacred geography that Rus, the most ancient form under which history makes mention of the name of Russia, and he contended that Rus and Musk must denote the nations of Russia and Muscovy. It is credible, says he, that the Rus and the Meshech, that is the Rossi and Mashi of whom Ezekiel speaks, descended the Russians and the Muscovites, nations of the greatest celebrity in European Scythia. Now, you might not think it's important to go through this, but any of you who will remember what happened in 1991 when the Soviet Union collapsed, and people who had been looking to Russia in particular under the Soviet Union to do what Ezekiel had said, some brethren said we must be wrong, because Russia is essentially no more. The Warsaw Pact just dried up, and hence it was important to go back and review all these things again to be sure. Any of those brethren looking now would not have that same feeling, because they can see a revival of this nation. something I think is even more elaborate in history. Now, that's a chart that was made for preaching in the 60s. That's what we said. And one of the distinctive things about that chart was that you can see we saw Europe divided east and west. You have the NATO Pact countries, you have the Warsaw Pact countries, and you have Russia. It was an east-west arrangement. We saw, and as we used in many cases in our writing, that we're talking about the Reds. So you who are old enough to remember those days under the Soviet Union, we did. We talked about them as the Reds. And maybe that's probably the reason why that whole area was colored in as red. But they were the four things that we worked on in prophecy. Russia advancing to world conquest, Christ coming, the world's only hope, the amazing return of the Jews to Israel, and the breakup of the Western world. Those were the four planks by which we went out to the public and preached to them about what was going to happen on the world, in the world. Now, in more recent days, this chart was made probably 2010, around that time, with computer graphics. We can make a better job of it. But we also are looking at a north-south arrangement of the nations. Something's happened since the Soviet Union collapsed. And we want to talk a little bit more about that. And one of the things we found very effective in preaching was to just look at all those nations which are mentioned in Ezekiel 38, find out what their flag looks like, and get the flags out on display somewhere in a box, and talk to the people about it. We found it was very attractive to the public to go over and get a flag, say, of any one of these nations, Egypt, Jordan, Israel. They're all standing in a flag bank and coming over, putting it in a box, and then telling the people why that nation is mentioned in the Bible. What is their role? He couldn't say a lot about some of these because they're working under the headship of others, but we had a lot to say. You could get 15, 20 people involved in a campaign like that. And when we look at one of the key things Brother Stephen was talking about this morning, it's a very essential thing to get people working, to want to work. Things which involve a number of people are sometimes the greatest thing to do that. Or you can ask someone to take the flag of Iran and walk up in public view. So you're out in the public somewhere, in a park or in a band shell somewhere outside. You put it in your flag stand and you tell the people, I want to tell you about what the Bible has to say about this nation. People see their flag. They want to know what you're going to say. And you have to be a little careful. But nevertheless, it is really handy to do that. Now, that was the date, December 25th, 1991, when Mikhail Gorbachev, who was the leader of Russia under the Soviet Union, passed things over to Boris Yeltsin, which was the start of the Russian Federation. Different flag. We always talked about the hammer and sickle. Then all of a sudden, there was no more hammer and sickle. That was the new Russian flag. Now, I can't be sure, brothers and sisters. I don't know if any of us could be sure. But if there ever was a time in recent history when you could see something like what God means, he will push you back, he will put hooks into your jaws and bring you forward, that's essentially what happened in history with the collapse of the Soviet Union and then bringing Russia back to the forefront again under the Russian Federation. And it gives us a new lease on life with respect to this nation in Bible prophecy. So in Ezekiel 38, verse 4, I will turn thee back, put hooks into thy jaws, and bring thee forth, and all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords. And what you really can't forget here is I will turn thee back and put hooks into thy jaws, and I will lead thee forth. So the God's behind this, and if he's got hooks in their jaws, they're his captives. He's bringing them forth to do the work that God has set for this nation to do. I think that's really quite an interesting aspect to see. So the rise of the latter-day Russia is what we want to concentrate on. Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal. So you need to know a few dates. Now, we talked about 1917, a very interesting year. And it was an interesting year also for what was happening in Russia, the Bolshevik Revolution. That's what led to the Soviet Union. And it went on to the year 1957. I don't know if any of you can remember what happened in 1957, but I tell you, it put a bit of terror in the Americans. That was the year that Russia flew the first satellite right over the United States of America, something Russian. And they'd always been fearful of these weapons that they were developing in the 50s, these huge nuclear bombs. For Russia to fly something right over the United States, Sputnik, it put terror in them. And that was what led to the race to the moon, with the Americans declaring they put a man on the moon before the end of the millennium. And obviously, they did that. They did that much before that. 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed. What happened in 2000? President Putin had his first term in office, the year 2000. In 2014, he was into Crimea, and he'd taken that over, and the world's still sort of, you know, echoing with the reaction to what happened in the year 2014. Moving in as he did with troops that were unmarked, claiming that he wasn't anything to do with Russia, and then finding out, of course, he'd taken the country. In 2015, he moved into Syria. He now had a base in Syria. In 2017, he not only had a naval base, he had air bases in Syria, moving toward the border of Israel. I tell you, if we'd seen that in the 60s, we would really have got into high gear. But we didn't see that kind of evidence. We just saw what was potentially there. Now, I think this is really quite interesting. You might want to just take a mental note of this. Because in Ezekiel 39, I'm reading from the ESV, it says in verse 2, I will turn you about, drive you forward, and bring you up from the uttermost parts of the north and lead you against the mountains of Israel. Now, a little thing happened, and it happened in 2007. The Russians decided they were going to lay claim to the North Pole. So they got a mini sub with a flag of Russia, and they planted it where they thought the North Pole was. Well, you could never get a nation that would come from further part of the uttermost part of the North than someone who claims the North Pole. Bible students, you know, they would be rejoicing with that kind of news, because it's not a matter of debate what he's talking about. There is only one nation that reaches up to those parts and that would claim the North Pole, but it's a little bit more impressive still that Russia comes from the uttermost parts of the north. So if you look at these cities on the left, St. Petersburg, Moscow, Sevastopol, Crimea, Ankara, Turkey, Latakia, Syria, Beirut, Lebanon, Tel Aviv, Israel, and Jerusalem, Israel, all kind of interesting cities with respect to what's going on in prophecy. And look at the longitude. You can see that stretching up to the North Pole, you go pretty well through St. Petersburg and Moscow, a line between those two cities. And then you go to a city which Russia recently invaded in Crimea, another very significant city which is also demarked or shown to be from the uttermost parts of the north, Ankara, Turkey, now in Latakia, Syria, maybe soon in Beirut, Lebanon, with an ear to go to or an eye to go to Tel Aviv, Israel, and finally to Jerusalem, the uttermost parts of the north. You can see the latitudes as they drop down from the north to where Jerusalem is. The little things, brothers and sisters and young people, but I tell you, you put all the evidence together, and it's pretty impressive that this is the nation that God's speaking about. Russia is to be the guard. Be thou prepared. Prepare for thyself, thou and all thy company that are assembled unto thee, and be thou a guard unto them. Well, a guard is, as was already told us in our studies, it's a military term. It's referring to a jail, a prison, a guardhouse, or a guard, a guard post, the act of guarding. So obviously they are guarding their company in an interesting way. We used to think in the 60s that guarding was something like the Warsaw Pact countries. There's no way you're getting out of this. Russia's keeping you in there. We're not so sure that's exactly what they would do today, but Russia has a very interesting policy. They're friends of all the countries of the world, it seems, even though many of those countries are at enmity with themselves. A most interesting policy to have, but it seems to fit what they're trying to achieve. Again, this is the work of God. I will turn thee back, put hooks into thy jaws. I will bring thee forth. And so we see the other nations that are mentioned, Persia, Ethiopia, Libya with them, all with shield and with helmet. Now, there's a lot of news out there. And if we had to look at all the news to find what we are trying to look for in the news, we would spend a good part of our life doing it. That's certainly the waking hours and maybe some of the quality time hours of our life. But Brother Don Pierce, with his production in Milestones, has really made it a lot easier, even though keeping up with Brother Don is kind of hard to do because the milestone snippets that come through are maybe 15 pages of reading. You can be selective because he puts it in sort of lumps that you can choose. But I've never found anything so effective as being able to just go to that website, christadelphianvideo.org, and selecting what you want and finding out what's happening in the world. A lot of the quotes, in fact, almost all the quotes I have tonight come from that website. Now, what I want you to see is something you may not have seen very much of, and that is the Christian roots of Russia. We never saw this in the Soviet Union. In the 60s, there was nothing Christian about the Soviet Union. The churches were either destroyed, they were turned into museums, or they were just vacant. This is new. And with the fact that it's an interesting thing, an interesting face that Russia wants to show, we need to pay a little attention to this. So this is just a quotation from Radio Free Europe, but it's very current. You know, July 29th of this year, thousands of Orthodox Christian believers marched and chanted through the streets of Moscow, Kiev, and other cities marking the 1,030th anniversary of the adoption of Christianity in the region. We would never have seen that in the years of the Soviet Union. That's new. The July 28th events commemorated the date in 988 of the baptism of Prince Vladimir, who was the leader of the Federation of Slavic Tribes known as the Kievan Rus. Centuries later, the Federation evolved into the Russian Empire. It just goes on to say, underscoring how deeply politics have become intertwined with religion, Russian President Vladimir Putin spoke to thousands of clergy and believers in Moscow at a statue dedicated to Prince Vladimir. Maybe he thought it was to him. I'm not sure, but it was to Vladimir. Adopting Christianity was the starting point for the formation and development of Russian statehood, the true spiritual birth of our ancestors, the determination of their identity. Identity, the flowering of natural culture and education. Putin said, like, this man's giving the face that he is Christian. And not only is he Christian, he's got more claim to be Christian, as you see in what he's saying here, than even the leaders of the Western countries. You see him, the man who may very well be the man, we don't know. We can't be sure about that. We've thought many times that the man on stage was the man and found out it wasn't. But it's interesting how this man takes advantage of every opportunity he gets to advance his agenda. So Putin sees an opening in Europe's fury with Trump. Mr. Putin was now gaining considerable traction by casting himself as a reliable friend and trading partner to Europe, even as the Trump administration was treating its closest allies there as strategic and economic competitors. He said, "It's not our aim to divide anything or anybody in Europe," Mr. Putin said in a television interview before he went on to Vienna. "On the contrary, we want to see a united and prosperous European Union because the European Union is our biggest trade and economic partner. The more problems there are within the European Union, the greater the risks and the uncertainties for us. You can't forget that word, Maskrabanka, because this is all part of the face of the nation today, that they're doing something behind the world's back, and they won't know it because they try to distract them, and they only find out about it when it's relatively too late. New York Times, June 5th. Like, I'm almost afraid to say this lecture crudely could be out of date because I haven't checked the news in a week. And you know that's the way it is. Like, things happen so fast, they're developing and going on at such a pace, we really don't know what's happened just in the few days we've been here. Now, there's no question about the fact that Europe needs Russia. This has been pointed out to Germany. Why are you building this Nord 2 stream, this big gas line from Russia down to Germany? Don't you realize that you're going to make yourself more dependent upon Russia? And it's built anyway. Well, if you see the colors here, this is Gazprom's map. And the greater the color towards the red, the more dependent the nation is on Russian gas. So you see Italy, Germany, Poland, somewhat Britain, and you see the gas lines all running down. Isn't it really fascinating how that God put nations in places where there also was oil and gas? And some nations, like, where's the oil and gas in Europe? Why can't they get enough there to supply them? Well, there isn't enough. So they need to go where it is, and that's nearby. So you can see how nations are building these links. But from what we expect, that is that Europe will be aligned with Russia. We don't exactly know how. This seems to be quite an interesting route. But this also is in the news. Instances of Russian coercion in the energy sector. The Kremlin's use of energy coercion began even before the USSR actually dissolved in December 1991. For instance, it interrupted oil supplies to the Baltic states in 1990 in an effort to crush the region's budding independence movements, although to no avail. Russian energy companies, presumably with the Kremlin's blessing, have gone on to make multiple attempts over the past 25 years to use energy supplies to gain leverage over Russia's neighbors and advance Moscow's strategic priorities. The author has identified at least 15 discrete instances where Russian entities use price and physical volume manipulation of crude oil or natural gas supplies, often amid political tensions, to pressure consumers located in Central and Eastern Europe and the former Soviet countries. And that's just, again, from the review that you can get access to from Snippets Files. These are the kinds of things that make you wonder, like, that's news that everybody has access to. Why would Europe continue in that direction? Except that God says, I am doing this. And when God's doing it, then nations just have to follow along. Now, I found this quite interesting. You may have known this, but if you're new to this and you haven't kept up, the Jews from the former Soviet Union make up quite a significant part of Israel. As it reads, the last Soviet census of 1989 indicated that 1,449,000 Jews living in the country, of about which 877,000 had moved to Israel by October 2000. The wave of immigration in this short period of time was the greatest influx of people to Israel since the date of its creation. Immigrants from the former Soviet Union composed 50 to 70% of the newcomers in that time period. So here's the writing on a manhole cover in Tel Aviv. Look at the languages. Well, you can recognize English. You can recognize Hebrew. You might recognize Arabic. But the last part's Russian. There's so many Russian people of Russian descent living up there that they really have to put it in Russia, in Russian, to give them proper warning as to what actually is happening or going on at that particular place. So Russia has quite a number of Russian-speaking people to look after, so to speak, in Israel. That was one of the excuses that Russia used when they moved into Crimea, is there were so many Russian-speaking people there that they wanted Russia to move in, or that Russia was coming to protect them. Well, you can see the same kind of reasoning might very well be used by Russia at some appropriate time. Now, the man on the left is the defense minister of Israel. The man on the right is the defense minister of Russia. Both of them come from the former Soviet Union countries. Both speak Russian. Isn't that interesting? They get along pretty well. And that's an indication of some of the interesting aspects to look for and how these two nations will fare together when they're on the borders, or at least when Russia's on Israel's borders. So Russia and the evil thought. And Ezekiel 38 says, to take a spoil, to take a prey, to turn thine hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited, that are upon the people that are gathered of the nations, which have gotten cattle and goods that dwell in the midst of the land. And when we were trying to sort this out in the 60s, we had a book, I think it was written by Percy Bilton, Russia, Israel, Christ and You. And his idea was that the spoil, and he put this in big letters, he spelt spoil with S-P, capital O, capital I, capital L, because he thought it was oil. But there was no oil discovered in Israel at that time. The oil we thought that Russia might be interested in was Saudi Arabia's oil, or the oil that was in the Persian Gulf. So we thought that Russia would come down into that area for the sake of taking that spoil. But it's been very different. Very different. And some of you young ones have seen it as much as anyone. Now you can see what could very well be Russia's reason for coming down. But there are others. These oil rigs that are now in the Mediterranean, there weren't any at that time. So in 2009, this is how recent it is, that's when they found the Tamar field. In 2010, the Leviathan field. In 2016, they found oil on the Golan. They found oil in great concentrations around Jerusalem. And now they're drilling in the Valley of Jezreel. So Israel seems to be just soaking in oil where we didn't see any of it back in the 60s. So we have a lot more reason to think of why Russia would be going down there. Like, you have to do a little reasoning behind the scenes. What does Russia have that other nations need? They have oil. Why is Russia sort of cozying up to Saudi Arabia? Well, they have oil. Why would Russia be interested in the Middle East around the southern or the eastern part of the Mediterranean? Well, because of the oil. Look at that. These are all the fields they found. So they've got a field off of Lebanon. They've got a field around Cyprus. They got a big discovery around Egypt. They got these fields off of Israel. And who knows how much more they might discover down there. If Russia really wants to corral the world's oil reserves, then it would obviously have to have some interest in this part of the Mediterranean, especially when they have ideas of exporting it to the southern part of Europe. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see. And from that point of view, it's something, you know, a little fascinating to lighten up our life a little bit, but we don't want to get overcome by this. We don't want to get too stuck into this that we miss some of the things that are far more important and personal. One of the things that Israel is shown the world that they can lead in is research and development. So they have strategically placed their research centers in those five areas, in Beersheba, Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Haifa, and then what they call the northern region. All of these symbols you can see are symbols of very big countries, of very big companies, that are interested in developing software or developing something related to electronics. Why would they be so interested in Israel? And that's the thing that's so significant. Like, why would they go to a city or to a country that seems to be at war half their time? Now, I found it really significant to look at this, that Intel, making these chips that are in phones and computers, etc., is to invest a further $5 billion in Israel, semiconductor processing facility. Where is it? Kiryat Gat. That's Gath. That's just a few miles away from Gaza. They've been shooting rockets around this place. And they knew that because it's not recent to be shooting rockets around it. So this is May 31st this year. I have now received a happy message from the Intel chief executive officer for Israel, Yaniv Gerti, who informed me that after 2 years of intensive work, the management of the global company accepted our proposal. They're going to make a big further investment in Israel. I just think that's one of the other things we would want to look at when we see what might be their reasoning. But there's another one, brothers and sisters. And we hinted at this a little bit already. If you look at that map, and it talks about the expansion of Christianity, you will know there are three Romes. There is a Rome, which we have up here somewhere. There's a Rome, which is right in here somewhere. And then there's another Rome that's up here somewhere. One is the city of Rome. One is the old Constantinople or Istanbul. And one is Moscow. The Russians consider themselves the third Rome. They consider that they have inherited a position of sort of overseership of the Eastern Christian Church. Look at the Byzantine coat of arms of the second Rome. Look at the Russian Federation coat of arms of the third Rome. Don't you notice the similarities? Like this was started off very quickly when the Russian Federation was announced. It's almost as if they got off and running right away with where they wanted to go. We are going to stand up for Christianity. Well, you wouldn't see Gorbachev. You wouldn't see Brezhnev. You wouldn't see any of those like Khrushchev or any of those standing up with a Roman Catholic priest. Well, he wouldn't be a Roman Catholic, he'd be a Russian Orthodox priest. But there's Kirill. He's the patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church. There's Putin standing beside him. And just look at what he was saying. Continuing in his remarks, Putin stated, this is April 6, 2015, so it's a couple of years back, he stated that he has championed Russian laws that essentially outlawed abortion in Russia, no abortions after the 12th week and before that time in limited cases, and also the end of financial support for abortions, reversing a previous Soviet policy. I just want to figure out why that slide came up. It wasn't supposed to. Anyway, essentially allowing abortion in Russia, said that, strongly supporting traditional marriage, especially religious marriage, with financial aid to married couples having more than two children. So, you know, a religious marriage, a traditional marriage, and Russia's fairly strong on that. Well, you know, America and Canada seem to be going the other way. And then established compulsory religious instruction in all Russian schools, made religious holidays now official Russian state holidays, instituted a nationwide program of rebuilding churches that were destroyed by the communists, the most notable being the historic Church of Christ the Savior in Moscow. Now, this has been going on a long time. This has not just happened this year. This has almost been going on as long as Putin's been in power. Going back to Christianity, taking their position as the third Rome, looking at trying to get, I wouldn't doubt, I haven't pursued this too much, but it looks like the Orthodox Church in Ukraine and the Russian Orthodox Church are really at loggerheads as who's going to really lead this. And it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. But you know what's happened between Russia and the Ukraine, so maybe that's one of the reasons there was that problem. Now, this has caused hundreds of millions of dollars to do this. From what these buildings look like in the Soviet Union years and what they look like now. Beautiful buildings. Russia seems to be wanting to impress its own citizens and the citizens of the world. It's a Christian country. Here's one that in St. Petersburg that was a museum during the Soviet years. But now these things see a revival of their Christian roots. But look at this. This is Jerusalem. Now, my sister wife and I, on our 40th anniversary, decided we'd go to Israel to have a look at to see whether or not Russia was really in somewhere in Jerusalem. And we found a lot of things that illustrated to us, yeah, they were. Like, this church is obviously really being blessed with money to get the gold on those turrets, to get the painting job that made it look so attractive. That's recent. If you see its position, and you can see the Dome of the Rock, it's right there, the Church of Mary Magdalene, just at the bottom of the Mount of Olives and the graves there. You can see the graves just off to the right. Not only that, well, I have a little list on this. The Church of Mary Magdalene was built by the Tsar Alexander III in 1888. So this would be back in the time a little bit later in John Tamas's book, but it certainly it was back in that time before the Soviet Union when they did a lot of building in and around Jerusalem. But look at this one right at the top of the Mount of Olives. If you've ever been to Israel, you can't miss this. It's a 64-meter tower that dominates the Mount of Olives skyline and belongs to the Russian Orthodox Church of the Ascension. It was built to this height in the 1870s, so the pilgrims unable to walk to the Jordan River could climb its 214 steps and at least see the river. Now, if they could climb 214 steps, you'd think they'd be able to walk to the river. So I assume there was some other reason why they couldn't do that. But this is even more recent. And I've got this out of snippets just this year. And it's quite significant that Russia has been working with Israel to reclaim some buildings it had in Jerusalem. This is one of them. One of two restored Renaissance-style towers in Sergei's courtyard in Jerusalem, built by this Grand Duke Sergei Alexandrovich of Russia, 1857 to 1905. So this is the way it was announced, and I got it from snippets, May 29th this year. In a rare move, Russian embassy is to host its National Day party in Jerusalem. Now, before Trump ever moved his embassy to Jerusalem, Russia did move theirs to Jerusalem. The difference is Russia moved it to West Jerusalem, and the United States moved it to East Jerusalem, and East Jerusalem was the contentious point. But Russia keeps making its state or its claim that they moved their embassy to Jerusalem before the United States did. And hence, they're going to celebrate their national day in Jerusalem. So in nod to Moscow's April 2017 recognition of the western part of the city as Israel's capital, June 14th reception is to be held at the historic Sergei's courtyard. Sergei's compound, which was returned to Russia, listen to this, in 2008. Did you ever know that Israel was returning these kinds of properties back to Russia? And it holds a unique place in the history of the Russian presence in the Holy Land, the Russian embassy spokesman said. The decision to host the National Day reception there is not occasional. The compound symbolizes our culture, traditions, and represents a genuine Russian allotment in Israel and the Middle East in general. Now, what do you think the Israelis think about that? Do you think that President or Prime Minister Netanyahu is pleased with the fact that Russia has a presence in Israel? Well, you do know he was invited to go to Sochi. You do know that he went up to see the football playoffs up in Europe. But oh, here he is. He's right at the reception. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at a reception marking Russia's Day in Sergei's courtyard, Jerusalem, June 14th. Does he look sad and worried? Does his wife look worried? No, they look like they're quite honored to be there. And that's in Jerusalem. Now look at what he said. This is a holiday for Russia. And it's a celebratory day that it was initiated and takes place in Jerusalem. And I assume that there will be many more days like this one in Jerusalem, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said at the event. I know that we're going to celebrate many, many years of cooperation between Israel and Russia in Moscow and also next year in Jerusalem. Wow. I hope he reads Paul Billington's publications on Russia. And you know, it wouldn't be, I would be surprised if he didn't know about Paul Billington. Paul has attended meetings where he's talked to people that are high enough up that they would finally get out what actually Paul is saying. And yet they continue to meet. This is God's work. He's bringing Russia down to do a work there. And when they've done it, they will be dealt with, as we read in Ezekiel 39. Now, I thought this was cute because this is July 16th. The soccer ball that Putin gave to Trump had a chip inside that could transmit the phones. Now, apparently the soccer ball was manufactured to have a chip inside. But it was, I'm not sure what it was supposed to do, but it was only found by the security people, not by Trump. He would not have known that. I tell you, they are a sneaky bunch. You really got to be careful. So Russia's President Vladimir Putin offers a ball of the 2018 Football World Cup to U.S. President Donald Trump during a joint press conference after a meeting at the Presidential Palace in Helsinki, July 16, 2018. I love his smile. Now look at this, brothers and sisters. Like, the world doesn't know this. Even it could be that some of the people who actually believe that Israel has to go back might not see the significance of the land promised to Abraham forever. Not to Abraham as Abraham, the father of the Arabs, but Abraham, the father of Isaac and Jacob, the father of the Jews. So here you have Turkey, you have Syria, you have Iraq, you have Saudi Arabia, you have Egypt, you have Jordan, you have Israel. And if you put the boundaries of the land roughly in accordance with the Euphrates River running up to the north, and that becomes the eastern boundary, so you have to bring a line across the bottom coming somewhere towards Egypt and then along the coast. Lebanon's in that bounds. Most of Syria is in that bound. Iraq, a lot of Iraq is in that bound. Jordan is in that bound. Saudi Arabia, some of it's in that bound. It may be some of Egypt in that bound. Turkey may have a piece. All these nations really have a piece of territory which is in that land promised Abraham to Israel, to Jacob, and to his descendants forever. Well, where's Russia's military base? Latakia, Syria, right up there in those bounds. So in terms of being on the border of the land of promise, they're in the land of promise. In terms of being on the border of Jerusalem, they're in the borders of Jerusalem. We just have to wait for a few other things to happen, because there are a few other things that need to happen. But boy, we should be sitting on the edges of our seat, and we have a lot to say to the public, given the occasion to say something. Like, it would be a good idea for those of us who can write to write an article that you could submit to a newspaper when there's a crisis that it's just in keeping with what we want to say. Just be prepared so that we can do something like that. Have some literature ready so we can go out and we can campaign an area about what's going to go on in this place. God's given us that. We need to be able to speak about it. But the Russian presence in the Mediterranean, that he would come with many ships, is something that Russia is also working at intensely to build up its navy. They've been able to see how Russia, or United States rather, could extend its power around the globe by having a significantly powerful navy with an Air Force complement. And so you see the missiles. We saw the fact that, they have just as as much ability with those missiles as the United States does. It's quite a power to be dealt with. But there's no need to be worried. Because in Ezekiel 38, when it says, I'll call for a sword against him throughout all my mountains, saith the Lord Yahweh, every man's sword against his brother, we know what that means in other battles that God fought for Israel with. When it says, I'll plead against him with pestilence and with blood, I will rain upon him and upon his bands and upon the many people that are with him, an overflowing rain, great hailstones, fire and brimstone. I will magnify myself and sanctify myself. It won't be Israel's prowess. It won't be the prowess of some Western nation delivering Israel. God will be known in the eyes of many nations, and they will know that he is Yahweh. So when we see this prophecy of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal, and the RV seems to be the best version, although sometimes you feel a little hypocritical in choosing a version that says it the way you want it said, but nevertheless, it does mention Rosh. It does mention coming up from the uttermost parts of the north. It does not include leaving a sixth part of them behind. And it clearly says they will be disarmed. So with all these advanced weapons they have, it says, I will smite thy bow out of thy left hand, and I will cause thine arrows to fall out of thy right hand. So with all the fears that people may have had in the years when we were talking about nuclear war, and now these weapons of chemical warfare nature, and then biological nature, terrible weapons that can destroy life, period. God says, I'll smite your bow out of your left hand. I'll cause your arrows to fall out of your right hand. I will turn you against each other. God's fighting this battle, and he will bring it to the right conclusion. Russia is identified in Bible prophecy. We want to be clear on that. Russia's work is to group nations together to fulfill the prophecy of Daniel chapter 2. They're doing a very good job of being friends of everybody to collect them together. Russia is being moved by God to humble Israel, and the time to do so is nigh at hand. You can see a haughty spirit in Israel. Through all the things that they've been through, they have not acknowledged it was the hand of their God. This is what comes from the ruling powers and government. Very disappointed, I found Sister Dorothy and I to be when we went through Yad Vashem, the wartime monument to the Holocaust in Israel, and to never see a mention of God. With all the things the Bible has to say about what happened and why it happened, there's no mention about God. They've got to be moved to recognize their God. Russia will find holes in the defenses of the Western nations to work out its agenda. The prophecy that we read requires many, many people to fall on the mountains of Israel. Not weapons, not drones, not all the other things that people use today, but people. Somehow they will infiltrate those defenses. But in the end, the Russian army will stand up against Yahweh and meet its demise on the mountains of Israel. Thank you.